I do have some questions about GoWave. I just have not figured out how to edit in GoWave. I do know that you can bracket a selection with the left and right bracket and select that selection or copy, move, or delete it. But I never have really understood this point of selecting with the shift and the control right arrow and things like that. Selecting bits of audio and being able to scrub it and work with it and things like that. And I have never been able to make GoWave. I've never found a way to make it adequately with the speed that I'm used to. Scan through a file and find certain passages. With Total Recorder, I can hold the Control T down and away it goes, scrolling through a file at like anywhere from a quarter of a second interval up to 15 minute increments if that's what I want. You know, I can just scan through it and find specific passages within a couple of minutes, but I've never been able to find a way to do that with GoWave. Jump to time option, I guess, is always nice, but I don't know what time something occurs. I just like dialing to it until I find it. You know, maybe what it comes down to is the editor I use is the editor for me, but I would like to be able to learn how to do some of the things like that in GoWave so that when I'm in there doing effects, I can just go ahead and do a quick edit or something like that. But so far, I've just found editing an impossibility for me. I hope I'm not stumbling around what I'm trying to say. It's just that I've never found a quick, successful way to edit in GoWave. And I'd love to figure that out. Because as far as taking AC hum out or taking hiss removal and taking, you know, frequencies like AM frequency noise or real high notch noise and real high heterodyne noise and things like that, you can't beat something like GoWave or SoundForge, and I can use the effects. That's no problem.
I've certainly done some editing with GoWave, and that one tip that I got from you today, Tim, I think is one that's worth mentioning about marking your place so that you don't end up back at the beginning of a 20-minute file once you do an edit. But why don't you go ahead and just give us a little description?
GoWave is a little bit different than, for example, SoundForge. In the sense that when you initially open up a file in GoWave, your start marker's at the beginning of the file and your finish marker's at the end of the file by default. And until you move in either of those or place them in a different place by using your left or right brackets, left bracket for start marker, right bracket for finish marker, they will stay at the start and end of the file. Now the tip that Jerry was mentioning that I sent him today. If you've marked off a place, a section of a file to delete, and you delete it, and then you try to play the selection, you're not going to hear anything because everything that was formerly before your start and finish markers is gone. So your start and finish markers are practically in the same place. So the little tip that I sent Jerry is after you place your start marker at the beginning of the selection and before you place your finish marker, you do a Shift M. And what that does is that will store those current marker positions. Then you place your finish marker where you're going to place it, do your delete, and you do a Shift R for recall position. And basically once you do that, you will then be right where you left off in the file and you can start playing from that point and continue your edits. Now, Don, let me address your question about scrubbing. The scrubbing in GoWave is a little different than the scrubbing in, say, SoundForge, for example, or maybe even different than the scrubbing in Total Recorder. I'm not sure. In GoWave, basically, the way that you scrub is you slow down your fast forward or your rewind controls. They're set, I think, by default at 2.0, which is kind of normal speed, and you can slow them all the way down to like 0.1, which is very, very slow. As far as the markers go, you can do the shift right and shift left arrow, or the control shift left to control shift right arrows to move your start and finish markers in order to move them in small increments. I usually don't do that when I'm doing edits. I find it easier to slow down my rewind control and use that if I need to, say, back up a little bit and change, say, the position of my finish marker when I'm doing an edit. And it's kind of what you're used to and what you get used to, because I know people who've used, you know, SoundForge and start off using SoundForge get really used to that editing scheme, and it's much more like using, say, Word in that type of selection process of selecting a piece of a file. So GoldWave takes getting, in that sense, it takes a little getting used to, but I contend that, you know, once you get used to it, it's pretty quick. And I do a lot of editing, and I edit some pretty large files. Obviously, it depends on how fast a computer you have, too. I just jumped from a Pentium 2 to a Pentium 4. And man, in terms of editing, no matter what program you're using, that made a huge difference.
I guess what the problem I have been having is, even if I set my yellow play to, say, select, and green play to unselected, or something like that, I find that whenever I mark a section and then I delete that, after I delete that, and then I press the either of the two play buttons, it will play from the beginning. And I know in your podcast you talked about how you could do 10 seconds or something. Would that solve that problem? Would that play from the point where you are doing the editing?
The key, the thing that I just mentioned, Quinn, where you do a shift, after you set your start marker, you do a shift M, and then you set your finish marker and do your delete and then do a shift R, and that will recall the settings. That will play from the point that you left off at. What you're talking about is another problem, and that's the problem I tried to address in my podcast. If you do set, say, the green play to selected and the yellow play to unselected, and you want to preview an edit before you do it, that's why you'd set it up that way. That is, before you actually do the delete, you want to hear how it's going to sound. And the problem, of course, is that when you set the yellow play to unselected, since it's playing everything outside the markers, it's playing from the beginning of the file. And so that's where you would go into your view menu, set that to 10 seconds, and then when you use your yellow play command, which would be the shift F4, before you do that, you just hit your left arrow a couple of times, and then you'll actually be playing a couple seconds before the edit, and you can hear the edit before you're going to do it. And that's basically what that little tip was for people who want to, if you don't want to go through that kind of process, and if you don't want to go through that bother, you can do an edit, and if you don't like it, you can always undo it and do it again. It's for if you want to hear how it's going to sound before you do it. That's where you would use the suggestion that I made in the last podcast. What I might do is put up another cast talking about this other tip about the shift M and the shift R, because I think that's more of a problem, is that people will do a delete and then they play and they don't hear anything and they're like, oh my God, what, something's not working. And it's just that the start marker and the finish marker are practically in the same place. So they're not going to hear anything. And that's where you would use the shift M and then the shift R commands. And that would solve the problem of once you've done the delete and you hit play, you're actually playing from that delete point on, so you're not listening all the way back from the beginning of the file.
Okay, so you're saying that the shift R will allow you to play from the point where you delete onward?
You put your start marker down with your left bracket key, then you do a shift M command, then you place, so your start marker now, you've put it where you want to set it, then you set your finish marker at the end of the edit point, at the end of the section you want to delete. Once you've, you play it back and you've decided that's the selection you want to delete, you hit your delete key, then you do a shift R, and that's shift R for, just think of the word recall. That's the way I remember it. Shift R for recall. And then from that point, if you hit your play button, it'll continue on from the point of the delete, continue on in the file where you left off. And you just do that every time you're going to make you're going to do an edit. It works out pretty well.
Oh, that's great. Oh, my goodness. I wish I'd known this long ago. What was it I was going to ask? Oh, yes. Does it matter whether you press the green play or the yellow play after that?
Tim, another question I had, too. How do you do a delete except selection? I know when I'm editing my books and want to take the front and ending trailing information that's insignificant off, I sometimes have ended up deleting the material I selected, and I just want to know if there's a way to do an except selection delete.
Yes, let me answer Quinn's question first, and I'll respond to that post-haste, Mr. Ball. Quinn, that depends. That depends on where you have the selection buttons set. If you have your green play selected to selected, there's six choices that you have. There's I'm trying to think of them all. There's unselected, there's entire file, there's selection, there's play to end. I think there's a couple more. I forget them all. Loop, I think maybe one. That depends. If you have the green play button on the selected radio button option that's used with the selected option, if that's the radio button you choose, then that will work. So either the green play or the yellow play. So sometimes what I do when I do edits or when I'm editing a file, I'll either keep both buttons on selected, the selected option, or I'll keep one button checked for the selected and the other button checked for the unselected. But it's basically, once you do the delete, whichever button you've checked for selected, then that tip will work for you. And Don, the answer to your question is yes. The trim command, which is Control T, will do what you're wanting. It'll delete everything outside the markers.
Joe G here. I've got a number of things probably I could bring up, but the most important right now is that Goldwave will let me get started and do a few things, and Windows is constantly wanting to close it down for some reason. I have no idea. I've uninstalled it. I've reinstalled it. I have actually gone to the trouble of reinstalling Windows XP, checking for viruses. The problem persists. I cannot do only a couple operations in Goldwave, and so I can't actually get too far.
I think, Joe, with a demo, you're supposed to get 500 keystrokes or something like that before you get a nag message, and it tells you have to close down. I don't know if that's the problem you're having or it's actually crashing your system. If you get a message that says, Goldwave, this is a demo of Goldwave, blah, blah, blah. If that's the case, registering it would fix that problem. If it's actually crashing your system, then I don't know what the answer is to that.
Is there a way to fast forward faster than the regular fast forward button? Say you like to jump, say, 10 minutes into the file, or, an hour into the file. Is there a way to jump quickly to go and listen from there instead of listening from the beginning and in the fast-forward mode?
This is Jerry. Hi, Quinn and everybody else. Tim, if you don't mind, I'll see if I can attack this one or respond to this one, I should say. I've actually done it two ways. One, you can set cue points. From the edit menu, you go, I think it's from edit, if I remember right, you can go to the cue points menu, and you can tell it to set cue points at regular intervals throughout the file, no matter how long it is, and you can set them at 1 minute or 5 minute or whatever the interval is that you want. And once you've done that, then you can use Control J to jump to the first cue point, and then Control J to jump to the next one, and so on. The other way to do it is to set the start marker at a specific time. If you know you want to jump 10 minutes into the file, you can set a start marker from the time option and set it to 10 minutes. Is that how you would do it, Tim?
I knew about the cue points, but I never knew you could preset them, Jerry. See, I knew I'd learn something from this. Yes. If you do a shift E is the shortcut, Quinn. That'll get you into the marker edit menu, and you'll see two edit boxes, one for your start time and one for your finish time. And as Jerry said, you can just type in, like if you wanted to go 10 minutes, you'd type 10:00:00:00, and you jump, I think that's correct. Yeah. And then you jump 10, and then you hit enter, and then your start marker would move 10 minutes ahead in the file. But I didn't know about I knew about the cue points, but I never knew you could actually tell Goldwave ahead of time to say drop a cue point every 5 minutes or 10 minutes, whatever. That's cool.
Yeah, and I think on setting the time on that marker, if I'm not mistaken, you have to do 00:10:00:00. Because I think if you do 10:00, it'll give you 10 hours. But I could be wrong about that. I don't know what that would do if you have a 15-minute file, whether it would be smart enough to recognize that or not. And, yeah, the cue points, I think it only works on standard PCM files. I don't think you can do it if you have saved the file to MP3 or even WAV, I don't think. But I've done it with the cue points, and it seemed to work some of the time. It wasn't all that great, but it did work. You can set them manually with, I think it's Control Q. You can jump from one to the next with Control J. And if you go to the cue points menu, you can actually tell it to do it automatically and tell it what the interval should be.
Well, this is Joe again. Just to let you know, I did pay for the program. So this is a Windows thing. It's saying that we're forced to close this and we're sorry. And do we want to send an error report to Microsoft? That's the kind of problem that I'm seeing.
What are the specifics of your system, Joe? Well, just mainly memory and hard drive is what I'm after.
I've got a machine here. It's 1.3 gigahertz clock speed. I got 512K of RAM in here using WindowEyes, Window XP. Hard drive is an 80-gig drive. And I just... That's why I'm so puzzled. It seems like I've got enough to do anything I ever want to do.
I'm assuming you meant 512 meg. I don't think a computer has run on 512K in years, but you got enough is where I'm coming from with that, and I don't know. And you said you reinstalled XP is what I'm thinking about. Is your processor an Intel or an AMD? I've only run GoWave on an Intel processor, so I don't know if that would have anything to do with it or not. I would assume it wouldn't have.
It's an AMD, I believe. Yeah, I did misspeak myself. Of course, it's 512 meg.
Hey, guys. Al from Michigan here. I don't know a lot about GoldWave specifically. That's sort of why I'm here. But as far as the troubleshooting, where does GoldWave store data when you're editing? I'm wondering if maybe it's a temp files issue or something like that, if you can clean out the temporary files. And also, how much free hard drive space do you have?
I've got 67 gig space. I believe that's got to be adequate. I don't think I've got that many temp files in there. Every once in a while, I'll try and get rid of that. But with that amount of space, it shouldn't make much difference at this point.
Yeah, Joe G., I wonder... if it's the version you're using, if you could try a different version to see if it would help. Of course, they're up to, 5.14 now? Or are they up to... No, it's Total Recorder that's gone to 6. I used 5.08 for the longest time because I couldn't find a version suitable to my taste. But... they finally got all of those little problems that I had with it, OGG files and things like that corrected, and I use it. But I've not had any trouble installing a particular version, but it might be the version you're trying to use. I don't know.
I'm using 5.13.
I'd send a note to Chris Craig, who's the author of the program, who's very responsive. As a matter of fact, he was the one who gave me that tip, which I posted on the list. In answer to Al's question, the temporary files, you can change the directory where they're stored. If you go to storage options, it'll show you the directory where they're stored by default. I think it's something like /temp or something like that, but you can change the directory. So if you have a machine, for example, with two hard drives and you want to have all your audio on one hard drive, you can do that. That's what I used to do on my old machine. I had GoldWave on my C drive, but I had all the audio files I used on the D drive. It does create temp files, TMP files, that you can, delete when you're done.
If I'm not mistaken, in the file, I'm not sure where it is, but in one of the settings menus, you can tell GoldWave whether to use RAM or use hard drive space when it's processing files. And I'm wondering if it could have something to do with that. And that reminds me of one more thing that I had trouble with GoldWave. What would happen is when I was running GoldWave, I would have trouble task switching to other programs, and it would seem to bogged down my speech program, and I went in and I did something, and it's in the options from the F11 menu, the options menu, and I believe it was under either visual display or something close to that, and I went in there and told it not to display a lot of things, and ever since I did that, I never had that problem.
It might have been, I know under visual options, there's a thing that asks you if you want to show the recording Or maybe that's not a record option, if you want to show the meters. Yeah, obviously, anything like that. But yeah, Joe, that's a good point. I think it is. I think that's maybe under storage options, too. And I ask you if you want to store the temp files in RAM or in hard disk, and make sure it says hard drive, because you'll run out of RAM pretty quickly if you're telling it to store it in RAM.
Yeah, this is Jerry again. Yeah, I just opened GoldWave and went in, and I was right. It was in visualizations. And I set everything in there that was settable to blank. I set them all to blank. And then you're right, Tim, about the storage options. When you go into there, one of the options says, oops, I accidentally let go of the mic. One of the options in there does say you can either choose hard drive or RAM. And for the person that's having the difficulty, you might want to switch it from one to the other and see if that helps.
Yeah, where's the storage options? I know they got... They got GoldWave help, and GoldWave setup options. I don't remember seeing something like that in there.
It's from the options menu. There's file and color and a couple other ones, and then storage.
Okay. I'll play with all this, because that makes an awful lot of sense. You never want to put temp files in RAM and suck it up. Maybe that's what's happening, and it suddenly makes the program go ape.
Did you get the message, Joe, that I sent you with the link to the page to get the GoldWave set files, by the way?
Yeah, I got that. I might have, I mean, I got the set files that came with WindowEyes. Now, are you saying these other set files are better? And, of course, when you get a set file, you never know how to use them. I mean, whether you use the Alt 1 through Alt 9 or whatever to read the specific things you're saying, because those, I don't know what the set files are doing for me now, but certainly none of those normal windows give me the information I'd expect to see.
If you go into the WindowEyes subdirectory where you find where the GoldWave set files are stored, I think he's just updated these. I think they've been updated, but the ones that you have will probably work. But if you go into the GoldWave where the set files are stored in WindowEyes, There's I think goldwave.txt, which is documentation for that particular set file, and it'll tell you all the keystrokes to use in order to get the information that you were looking for in terms of time and so forth.
One of you said that it's good to choose the hard drive storage instead of RAM.
Correct, Quinn, because unless you've got 10,000 gigs of storage space, between running JAWS or WindowEyes or whatever screen reader you're running and running GoldWave, you're just not going to have enough RAM. I mean, I've got 2 gigs of RAM here, and that's still not enough to record WAV files. So, yeah, you definitely want to choose the hard disk option under the storage options for storing your temp files, as opposed to the RAM option.
Volume control is kind of important to use any program like GoldWave. There are record volumes and play volumes in there, and you have to make sure which ones you're setting. So if you have line in checked on the play side but not on the record side, it's not going to record from the line in. So without going into too much detail, that's about all I can think of to say on that.
I've had the problems with where I am in the volume control. You can get it at different places, but often I can't find the microphone. I'll see anything else. Plus, the other thing is, GoldWave doesn't show us the master volume control. I can set my Wave MP3 control, but what Windows calls the play control is what I think of as a master. Well, one of the things I like to do when I get everything set just the way it's supposed to be, I got a switch on my sound equipment here that I can go to and listen immediately between input and output, and when I get my volumes adjusted, everything right, there's no change in level between those two, and it really permits me to get a very satisfactory product.
That brings up QMix. Volume control setting is difficult, and it's difficult to get these line ins and things right so where you can have an excellent recording and things like that. When you get a volume set of volume controls that you like, and you know you want to save that so you can go back to it as your default or whatever, it's good to have QMix. I've never been able to find a program that can beat it, really, and I got it off the JFW Lite page, but I'm sure they've got a home page, but I don't know where it is. If you've never seen it, you can set all of your volume controls exactly the way you want them, and then you can go into this program called Quick Mix and set your volumes or save that particular template of volume so that you can use it later. Now, what you can do with that, as long as QMix is on your system and the files are associated, you can take the QMX files and either run a shortcut to your desktop or put the QMX file directly into your desktop. And you can click on that file and it will set that particular set of defaults for volume. It really helps if you've got, you know, a USB headset or something like that versus your regular sound card, and you need to set the record in one and the play in the other and that sort of thing. If you want to save all those settings, you can do that with Quick Mix. And I put Quick Mix on every novice's system because you get a novice person in there using Winamp or something like that and they accidentally mute their sound card, JAWS and everything goes dead. So it's easy, you know, it's good for them to be able to click an icon on their desktop to reset all those controls back to their default values and stuff.
When you are recording in GoWave, is there a way you can check whether you're recording? Like, is there some sort of status line?
What I usually do, Quinn, just to make sure, is I'll do a quick test. First you open a file, and then you do, obviously, a Control F9 to start recording and a Control F8 to stop recording. And I'll usually do a quick test to test it to make sure that I'm recording. Let me go back to one of Joe's other questions. Joe, in terms of seeing or not seeing the microphone, and this is the thing about the Windows volume control, there's play volume and record volume, which are obviously two different things. But when you go into your properties under the regular Windows volume control, if you go into properties, one thing that'll show you if you tab down and then arrow, is it'll show you, you can arrow down up and down through a list of different volume controls on your system, and some of them are checked and some of them aren't checked, and the ones that aren't checked will not show up in your play or record volume control. So that's why you may not, for example, be seeing the microphone volume, because it's not checked in that list. And so that's what you have to double check. And in terms of the what you hear option, which you mentioned before, that is a very confusing, very difficult to get to work. The little piece that I did on the little GoldWave tip that I just put up on the site last week took me about an hour to record, not because it wasn't working, but because I couldn't get the volumes adjusted the way I wanted them, because the synthesizer was so much louder than my microphone that I was using software speech and it overpowered everything else. Finally, I used Eloquence and that seemed to work, but That's the thing. If you're ever trying to do these kind of things and use your software speech, is it's just so loud, and it's so much louder than anything else you're usually recording, that to get, I don't know, you know, unless I guess if you're using an external mixer, that might help, but it's a little tricky.
I want to accomplish something. I want to do a podcast demonstrating the Orca screen reader for Linux. And to do that, what I'm going to need to do is have one PC set up as a recording workstation and then another one plugged in, I assume, either through an external mixer or to the line in of the sound card. So I'd basically need to be recording two sources. I need to be recording this Linux PC, and I'd need to be recording myself on the mic. But also at the same time, I need to be monitoring the audio output from the Linux PC, so, you know, I'd be controlling the screen reader, so I need to hear it at the same time. And I guess I don't know what equipment I need. I don't even know how to start.
If you're going to be recording from the line in and you're going to be using a mic, you're going to need a mic preamp to bring your line level up to mic level.
I didn't think about the mic preamp, but aside from that, I'm just not quite sure how everything would be wired. I'd want to go, the Linux PC would need to come to the line in on the recording PC, obviously, but then how would I hear the Linux PC? Would I turn the, I guess I could enable the play control for the line in on my recording PC and have a headset on that?
Yeah, and check the what you hear or the stereo mix option from your, I think in your sound card. Wouldn't that work, Jerry?
Well, I'll tell you, it would be a lot easier to use a mixer. I'm using a mixer right now, and it has a preamp built into it.
that enables me to use a mic that requires a preamp. It's a mixer I paid about $80 for. It's a Behringer UB. I can't remember the number of it. I think it's a 1202. But it's got enough channels on it that I could easily do what you're talking about. I would probably use a splitter from the output of the computer that you have Linux on, so that I could listen to it through headphones, and then also be taking the line out from it into the mixer, the output of which would go to the line in on the recording computer. So it could be done probably a number of ways, but it would sure be easy with a mixer.
That reminds me, does anybody make a mixer, or does that Behringer mixer that you have, I've been hearing, everybody buys that mixer, and I've been thinking about getting it. But does anybody make a mixer that has plug-in power on the mic jacks itself? In fact, does anybody sell a mixer that had, like a podcasting mixer, that just has miniature jacks and things instead of RCA jacks? I just wonder if somebody's designed a little podcasting mixer that's designed to plug into your mini disc recorder or whatever, that will not a mic preamp, not something that'll just run mics only, but that you can plug small radios into and that sort of thing. Just maybe some kind of little cheap plastic mixer with a couple of volume controls that you can run two or three sources into.
Now, this Behringer has quarter inch jacks and XLR jacks, and it has phantom power, but not plug-in power. And that reminds me of something else, Tim, that I want to, maybe we can get to before we call it quits, is I want to talk a little bit about, what do they call it? It's the record mode, looped recording, so that I can set it. For example, I've got microphones outside my house, and if I'm sitting here early in the morning listening to the birds and I think I may hear something I want to capture, I can set it to always be recording the last 1 or 5 or 10 minutes or whatever of time. And if I hear something I want, I just stop the recording, and it has automatically captured everything that's happened for the last few minutes. And that's one of the things that I really like about GoldWave. I'm becoming a devotee of Studio Recorder, but that's one thing that doesn't exist in Studio Recorder. I actually think Studio Recorder, I don't think there's any doubt that it's the most accessible audio recording program that has ever been created for somebody who's blind. But it does lack some of the features that GoldWave has. GoldWave has some more processing things like reverb and all that stuff, and this looped recording is just really cool.
I was listening to something, editing it the other night. Well, my hollering podcast, to be honest. That thing was 2 or 3 hours, and I was just wishing for a way. Now, I know in GoldWave I could do this, but in the program I'm using, there's no way to speed up faster than real time. I want to be able to hear the whole stream or the whole file, but I'd like to be able to hear it a little faster than normal. And I'm just wondering if there is a speech compression DirectX plugin that you can get that would for my sound editor, that would allow you to be able to listen to stuff a little bit faster, maybe?
I don't know the answer to that. I think Sound Recorder's got some plugins, but I don't think that speech compression is one of them. Good evening, by the way, to Chris G and all the rest of the people who've checked in here. I didn't mean to overlook anybody, and if anybody wants to jump in, please do. But it is available in GoldWave, and it works pretty well. You can either speed up by speed, or you can use speech compression so that you're hearing it at... so that you can hear Larry's walk to work in 10 minutes as opposed to 20.
Can you record, like, multi-tracks with GoldWave? I've recorded a song, and I want to record over it. My name's Janeline. Sorry, I've got a cold. And, yeah, I want to record over that song and put harmonies over the top of it. So you can use GoldWave for that, yes?
This is Jerry, and I would say the answer is no. The closest you could come to doing that, and it's possible to do, but it's very difficult, would be to mix the two files. But to actually be listening to one and recording the other one, I don't know of any easy way to do that with GoldWave. You can do that with Studio Recorder. You can do it with Adobe Audition and some of the other programs. But, Tim, any comments on that? I know you did it one time, but I bet it took a while to do it.
I think you can do it with Audacity.
What was the program that you did it with, Jerry, when you did that song? Was that Adobe Audition?
Yeah, it was Adobe Audition version 1.0, and somebody had written scripts for that for Jaws. Now they've got a later version, and the scripts don't work, and as far as I know, nobody has updated them, so I wouldn't consider that a very accessible program. If I were going to do it today, I would do it with Studio Recorder.
I had a small file recorded, and I was going to just use the rewind and fast-forward buttons so that I could hear the beginnings and the ends of the files, but it didn't stop. It was looping around and not ever letting me come to a definite end unless I slowed the fast-forward and rewind practically to a stop. I thought surely the files would come to a definite beginning and end.
If you keep rewinding, it will do that. It will loop around and then start. So if you rewind from the end and just hold your rewind down, it'll rewind and keep going until you get back to the beginning. So it does loop around. When you got it back to the beginning or got it back to a place you want to stop, you can hit your pause key, which is your F7, and then you can start playing from that point.
Now, I realize I can do that, but if it's a reasonable length file, you can't really tell exactly where you are. Of course, I know I could go to the end using that time business with Alt-D and then K or something like that, and eventually get you to tab between your start and finish mark, and you could rewind backward from the finish point, which is what I really wanted to do. But I figured I could do it since it was a short enough file with a rewind. I was disappointed that I couldn't do it the way I wanted to do it.
When you record something in low quality, and later on when you save it in high quality, the bad recording is still preserved. Is that correct?
That's correct. If you're recording on the computer, you know, as your original recording, I'm not talking about like if you have a tape recorder, you know, that you're transferring, say, a tape from another machine. But if you're recording the actual original recording on the computer, you want to record in as high quality as possible. You'd want to record in WAV format with a sampling rate of 44 kilohertz, which is CD quality. You can always downsample later, obviously, if you want to save it as a podcast or something else. But the basic rule of thumb is that you want to record in as high quality as possible at the beginning.
Kind of ironic. I just came out of the studio doing a recording session. And to add to what you were saying to Quinn, it's also, if possible, good to record in 24-bit so that you eliminate any quantization noise.
Yeah, James, I haven't done too much with 24-bit. I actually have a sound card now that'll support it. I mean, some of these sound cards will now record up to 96K sampling rate.
Yeah, and I haven't had any experience. I actually heard something about 32-bit, and I don't know about if that's all that necessary.
I think the latest beta of Studio Recorder goes up to 32-bit.
Yeah, it does, and I think Goldwave will actually support 32-bit under XP. That's more disk space than I want to use up.
Yeah, I've really never done anything above 16. I never even fooled around with 24.
Well, for the most part, you can get away with that. If you ever do anything where you hear, really happens with like lighter sounds. We were here that before I actually knew the term for it, I always called it digital sizzle. It's what they call quantization noise, and it's because if I understand it correctly, when it gets down so low, the sine wave doesn't have space to develop fully. And with 24-bit, that's not a problem.
You know, there's some proof to the theory that the higher you encode a file initially, the better it sounds at the lower encoding speeds or whatever. Because I got a concert that was remastered, an Elvis concert that I wanted a while back from Elvis in Madison Square Garden. And it was, see if I got the terminology right, it was remastered at 96 kilohertz. And I've got just a regular CD of it. But it does sound much better than the original. Well, you know, originally I listened to it on 8-track tape, so I really don't know what to go by to tell if it's any better than a regular CD. But it does sound very good and full quiet and everything. It's a real good recording.
I got a question for you, Gene, if you're still here. I think your name's still here. Are you using what do you use to do all your edits do you use? SoundForge or Goldwave, or what are you using to do all your radio stuff?
I use SoundForge. I'd like to know if there's anyone using Pro Tools.
Not in on the Mac Gene, yes. As far as I know, on the PC, no, not at all. This guy who's on the list, Kevin Reeves, uses Pro Tools. But I think he's using it with OS 9. And I don't think it, at this point, it does not work with Tiger, which is the new operating system for the Mac, which has got the built-in speech.
Tim, do you have an R9? I couldn't remember from the list who has what.
I've got an R1, actually. Let's see, who's got an R9? Neil's got an R... Or Neil had an R9. I don't know if he still does. Ball's got an R1. And I'm trying to remember. I know there are some other people who have R9s.
Yeah, I'm trying to find out some information about microphones and the R9. I'm trying to, while I'm in the States, I want to make some purchases, you know, because making purchases from India like that is very difficult. I haven't decided if I'm going to get an R9 or SD, what is it, 22, I think, or 022 or something, or both. So I'm just trying to do some asking questions. And I use an SM58 for interviews. So I'm just wondering how that sounds with the R9, if anybody in the chat knows.
Let me make a guess, and this is just a guess because I don't have an SM58 and I don't have an R9, Gene, but knowing the specs of the 58, because it is a good mic, but it's in terms as far as dynamic mics go, it's not as hot as some others. My guess is on the R9, it would be fairly noisy. And my guess is on the R1, it would be fairly noisy. Both the R1 and the R9, they seem to have higher impedances than some recorders, even some of the mini disc recorders. Is that both of those, I think, recorders would probably work better with condenser mics than with dynamics. And then, of course, it's just a question of do you want to use an Omni or a cardioid?
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going to say that. You know, that might in fact be the case, in which case if I were to go with that machine, I'd have to get another interview microphone, which I'm not altogether opposed to, but I don't know. I kind of hate doing that if I don't have to, but it seems like I probably will if I go with that machine. The other microphones I like to use are the CSB binaural microphones. I've had very good results with those with Minidisc, but I've never used them with a flash recorder.
I'm not familiar. Are those similar to the Sound Professionals? Are those like the in-ear, the ones that actually go in your ears?
No, they're Core Sound binaural microphones, and they're pretty versatile, actually. They have clips. They have permanent clips. You can clip them to things. So you can use them either in a stereo configuration or as binaurals or quasi-binaurals, I guess you could say. That's what I like to use, and I really do like those microphones, so I don't want to give those up.
Are they pretty well shielded?
I use them mostly outside, and so I haven't had that much trouble. The only trouble I've had with them is interference from mobile phones, but that's with every microphone cable combination. If there's a mobile phone that's close enough, that's sending out signals, it's going to get in there. But other than that, I haven't had any complaints.
It's been my personal experience. Mobile phones can get into anything, especially PA systems. Oof.
Oh, I know. Mobile phones and fluorescent lights. I was doing the recording at this meeting in Libya, and we had a 50-cycle hum, and I chased it, and I just couldn't find it. I just couldn't find out where it was, and we ended up notching it out, but it was such an annoyance, and we ended up minimizing it. Well, I think it was the lights, but then, of course, you know, when you start turning off the lights, these sighted people start shouting, and they're not very happy, so there's only so much I could do.
Has anyone ever used or heard of Bluetooth microphones?
Did you say Bluetooth microphones?
Heard of, never used.
Yeah, I did say that. Yeah, I was curious about that because I hate cords.
The problem is, Quinn, they wouldn't work. Let me answer Gene's earlier question. I think, Gene, the CSB mics would probably work great with the R9 because the R9 is similar impedances to mini disc recorders. I think you'd have plenty of audio with them. And Quinn, the problem with the Bluetooth mics, I think, would be that first of all, I think they'd only work with you'd have to carry around you'd have to use them on a laptop. If you were going to be doing portable recording, but I don't think they have that. They don't have that much of a range either. So.
And plus, I don't know of any Bluetooth mics that have that great fidelity. Maybe once Bluetooth 2.0 is widely accepted, but right now I don't think you've got enough bandwidth to really get any quality sound. I've heard people using Bluetooth mics, and it sounds, you know, acceptable for a voice chat, but not for much more than that.
Yeah, I completely understand what you're saying, Gwen, about not like being tied down with the wires. However, I've had terrible experiences with just about every wireless system I've ever used. Of course, I'm in environments all the time. You know, we play out live, and you just never know what you're going to be dealing with. So in your situation, that I agree the problem would be the distance, because I think it's only like 20 feet, 30 feet, something like that.
Well, actually, I've got a couple of Bluetooth microphones that are designed for cell phones. One of them is in a headset, so in configuration, it's a Bluetooth headset microphone. And it's probably okay for voice chat. It has a range of about, I think, 100 feet, and you wouldn't want to use it to record anything, that's for sure. But you could use it with a computer.
Is there a primer or an FAQ somewhere about all this stuff? I want to buy a digital recorder, and that's about all I know right now. I'm a beginner. I really haven't gotten into this stuff yet. I want to buy something, but I don't know enough about dynamic mics versus condenser mics versus Olympus recorders versus Edirol, and I've got 1,001 questions, and I just want to go do some research somewhere, but I don't know where to start.
The website transom.org is for broadcasters, but anyone can certainly log on to it. And there are a lot of reviews and discussion boards on that site about various equipment. Lots of information about microphones and also about flash recorders or digital recorders. Probably not much about the Olympus and the iRivers and the lower priced recorders, but more about things like sound devices and Nagra and Edirol. There would definitely be mini-disc discussions on there, high MD and so forth, but the more mid-range and high-end recorders would be covered there. And there's also quite a bit of information about microphones.
Thank you. How do you spell that site?
Yeah, it's Transom, TRANSOM.org. It's mainly for public broadcasters, but it's a public site. Anybody can log on there. And there are also links there to other pages, other websites you can look at. It's a very, very good website. Lots and lots of information there about all kinds of things.
Thanks a lot. That helps.
The other thing you want to do, Al, is, and there's a lot of people on this list who own a lot of these different recorders. The other thing you want to decide, too, kind of right at the beginning or close to the beginning, which is going to determine, obviously, what you're going to get, is how much money you want to spend. Because, as Gene mentioned, you can buy something like, you know, one of the little Olympus recorders for, you know, 100 or 200 bucks, or you can buy one of the sound devices recorders for 2,000 bucks. So, or even something like the, you know, a lot of people like the PTR1 recorder, which is a little bigger machine, but even, you know, or the PTR2, I guess now, which is the Plex Talk. Even that's about, you know, even that's close to $1,000. Transom's get a lot of good information, and the reviews of the recorders are very in-depth. Now, you're not going to get, obviously, information on how accessible they are, but, you know, that's when you can come back here and find probably somebody who owns one of them who can tell you that kind of info.
You know, the first thing I want to do is have something that sounds reasonably good, reasonably high quality when I do my podcasts, you know, and then I ask myself, well, am I better off spending more money on the recorder or more money on a better set of mics, that kind of thing. And I guess it's just a matter of reading the lists and seeing what the deal is. And I know that, you know, I've heard some podcasts done with the Olympus and they seem fine. I've heard some hums in some of those podcasts, and I don't know if that was because the mics weren't shielded, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think also in choosing a recording, I always ask people, what are they going to do with it? What is their eventual goal? And they may not know, but it's a good thing to think about. What environments are they going to use it in? Are they going to make podcasts, or are they in broadcasting, or and then also what kind of podcast or audio are they interested in making? Are they interested in interviews or soundscapes or sound seeing tours? You know, that sort of thing. And so all of those things will determine what kind of a recorder, how big it would be, you know, all of those kinds of questions. And that would also determine what kind of microphones. And probably, like most of us, you will eventually end up with several, if not many, different kinds of microphones for different applications.
I'm going to get me one of those MZRH1s. I'm looking at that now on the Sound Professional site. It comes with a mic and a set of headphones, but it'll help me put some of my old mini discs on the computer, something I've been wanting to do and all that. I like my MZB100, but that's the only drawback to it is you can't record live on it. In fact, I might continue to record on it and just use this new recorder for putting my stuff on the computer.
What I want to do is probably, you know, at least for starters, and once I get it, I'll do a lot more than likely, but I want to use it as kind of my version of home videos, you know, and just use it to make podcasts and to capture moments. And aside from that, I think I would want soundscapes and spatial things to be well represented. I really find that intriguing that these recordings can do that so accurately, and I'd want some mics that would shine in that regard, I suppose.
My wife and I are both blind, and we go on vacations, and I do a lot of sound seeing stuff. And I bought a pair of those $70 in-ear binaurals from Sound Professionals. I love them. I don't think you can get a more three-dimensional, particularly if you're listening through headphones, you can get a more three-dimensional representation than with to the point, you know, where that it's dangerous for me to cross streets and so on and so forth. But I agree with Gene too, you know, different mics for different tasks. That's why in the last kind of podcast that I did on microphones, I joked that I try not to spend over $100 on a microphone usually, if I can get stuff on sale. You can go crazy on mics. I mean, you can buy $3,000-$4,000, one mic that'll cost $3,000-$4,000 easily. Yeah. My wife is in the background here saying, because I made a deal with it, that for every mic that I buy, she gets a piece of jewelry, so I have to keep my budget low.
That means you got to keep buying mics, as far as she's concerned.
Hey, that sounds like quite a deal. Well, I'll tell you why I don't use in-ear binaurals, is because I really, really like to hear what I'm recording. Usually when I do a soundscape, it's for a client, and or at least for a potential client. So I really need to know that things are coming out properly. And like, for example, with this Soundcast soundscape in Libya, there were no second chances. So that's why I don't use them, but that's just my preference. I put them on a headset just above my ears, and that's where they sit. So they're not quite in-ear, but they're in the same position, so they don't get quite the same sound shaping that the in-ear binaurals get, but I think they do quite well.
Yeah, I agree with you, Gene. Give me monitors.
Yeah, Gene, you were talking about using the SM58, and you wondered how it worked with some of the new recorders.
What I'm really looking for, I am looking for something that's like the SM58, but in a dynamic microphone. In a condenser microphone. I really like dynamic microphones, and so I'm reluctant to stop using this, but it looks like I may have to. So I'm looking actually to replicate the SM58 in something. So I don't want the wide area. In fact, quite the opposite. I want a pretty narrow field on it, pretty narrow access. I've been very happy with the SM58 for that application. So I would like to get something as close as possible to it, and then I can just use my RE20 for narration and not use the SM58 for anything.
I've never used it with any kind of flash recorder or anything like that, but my vocal mic that I use is a Beta 57, and I love it.
Is that a cardioid pattern?
It's a regular cardioid. It's not a super cardioid.
Okay, yeah, because that's what I was going to ask you, whether you wanted to get something. I know a lot of... I talked to a guy who does work for one of the NPR stations down in Atlanta, and he says some NPR reporters are using shotgun mics, like some of the Audio-Technica shotguns, and they really like them, but...
Yeah, a lot of people do use shotguns. It seems to be the in thing these days. It's kind of a trendy thing. A couple of reasons why I don't use a shotgun. First of all, it's easy to hit somebody in the head with it because you're generally you're farther away from the subject. And the other reason is that it's sort of high profile, you know. And a lot of the people I interview, it's necessary to at least be, if not discreet, at least be, you know, not so high profile about it. And also, of course, those microphones, most of them are quite large, and a lot of the recording I do is field recording, so I have to carry everything. The smaller the better. That's why, and they are very focused. The thing I like about the SM58 is it's focused, but there's enough leeway that if the subject is turning their head or something like that, you don't have to chase them that far. If you've got some kind of a super cardioid pattern or some microphone that's extremely focused, then, you know, every time they blink an eye, you have to go chasing them, and then you really take the chance of having some problems in the recording. So it's difficult to have a happy medium. Sometimes what I also do, especially outside or in a crowded area, is that I will take the binaurals and put them in a single point configuration and do an interview that way, especially if it's something like a vox pop situation or something where people are moving around a lot, you know. Of course, it would have to be that situation is something where the ambience is part of the story. And that's also worked well for me, because then if they're moving a little bit, it doesn't matter. But with these interview mics, you have to somehow get some happy medium where it's tight access, but not too tight.
I know Audio Technica makes a bunch of condenser cardioids, you know, that you might want to look at. I think the big difference, though, you're going to find when you go from dynamic to condenser is most of the condensers, whether they're cardioid or omnis, go down to 30 or 20 hertz. So you're going to have to, you know, probably definitely do some more roll-off in post. And, of course, then if you're dealing with cardioids, obviously if you get too close, you get some serious proximity effect.
The best application for a single point binaural is in a situation where you want ambient sound, but then you want the interview voice or the sound highlighted. So you would only use those in a situation where you want where the ambience is part of the story. And I do a lot of those interviews, but for a studio interview mic, you want something that's a tight access, pretty highly directional microphone, and so you wouldn't want an omnidirectional microphone for that. And I think the mics that are in the R9, to my understanding, are omnis, although I haven't paid much attention because I hardly ever use built-in microphones to do anything. Another reason that I don't want to use the built-in microphones is that a lot of the places where I record are very dusty, very dirty, or possibly even wet. And so I feel much better leaving the recorder in a case, just having it that way. So I'm really not a fan of built-in microphones. Although I understand that the built-in mics on the Nagra, the Aries M2, I think it is, are very nice. Gary O'Donohue said they were very nice, and so, you know, I guess some are better than others.
The internal mics on the R09 are definitely omnidirectional. In fact, I understand that they pick up from the back almost as well as they do from the front. And I just out of curiosity, does anyone know if Rode makes a stereo condenser?
Yeah, the NT4. Everybody loves that mic. I chose the 822 over it, I guess for cost reasons or whatever, but everybody's loving the NT4.
How does your 58 work with your mini disc in terms of signal to noise ratio?
I don't have any numbers, any figures for you, but it works very well. I've never had one complaint from any engineers over the years, and the model I'm using, actually a very old Sony model of mini disc, one of the first. I bought a bunch of them on eBay several years ago, so I'd had enough of them until the digital recorders became at least somewhat usable. It's an MZ50, I think. And I think it's the second generation of them, or the second model. I had an MZ3 at one point, which I also liked, but it hit the concrete several years ago, so that was the end of that. But the I've got three or four of those MZ. It's either MZ50 or MZR50. They're the best in terms of accessibility, which isn't saying much, because there are a lot of things that you can't do. But there are less things that you can't do with the 50 than with many of the others. They've stood up well, but I'm tired of mini-disc, and I'm tired of losing files because the battery runs out, and you don't know when the battery's running out. And that's one thing about those Sony machines, is that it's difficult to know when it's charging. So for a lot of reasons, I'm changing.
Tim, who was it that designed that microphone recorder? Everything was all in the mic, and I think it was... I can't remember how much it cost. It seemed like it was pretty high. But somebody was designing a microphone that was to be used exclusively for recording interviews and things like that. And everything was all in the microphone, all the hardware and everything.
Yeah, I don't know who that was, whether it was Sennheiser or it was about $1,000. When you do your stuff in the field, Gene, do you mostly use automatic level or do you use manual level?
Almost always I use automatic. I've had pretty good luck with it. Very few problems with pops or distortion, partly because of the microphones I use. You know, the other part of the equation, one of the other parts of the equation that people forget is, of course, the microphones that you're using are just as, if not more, of a factor than the actual recorder. I'm not able to accurately hear levels in a noisy environment, and I haven't had any trouble with the AGC on those machines, so that's what I use.
Yeah, the AGC on those machines is great. It's frankly, I think it's better than the AGC on the R1. Well, actually, the R1, I take it back. The R1 doesn't have an AGC. The R1 has a limiter, which is different. But the AGC on the mini disc machines is those older mini disc machines is very nice. It seems like a lot of people are using the 660.
A lot of people went for the Marantz machines right off. They went for the 660 or the 670 or 71, and a number of them are regretting it, actually. They're not small machines. They're quite large in size, especially for field recording. People who were used to carrying around very small mini-disc machines had a lot of adjusting to adjust to the Marantz machines. And they do have some problems, and preamps is one thing, and some of the input configurations and so forth are others. The menus aren't exactly that friendly to use, even to sighted people. And so actually there have been, on some of the trade mailing lists that I'm on, there have been some Marantz machines for sale. There are a lot of Marantz users. Some people are using sound devices. A few people are using Fostex, and then mostly Europeans are using Nagra, and a few are beginning to use Eterals, but yeah, there are a few people using Eterals, but they're fairly new. And a lot of people are using M-Audio, MicroTrack, which I was actually very keen on for a while, but after reading reviews and problems that people are having, I wouldn't buy one of those things. But there are quite a few MicroTrack users around.
At this point, Gene, you wouldn't think about one of these new IMD machines that's got like the MZR1 or whatever, that's got the better transfer, the faster transfer capabilities and is compatible with the older mini discs?
Probably not, just because with a flash recorder, the transfer to the PC is so much faster. And if you're in the field for a long time, you don't have a PC, you have the ability to drop it into some kind of an external hard drive.